Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. I'm joined by Art Howell, Chief of Police for the City of Racine. Chief Howell, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I could ask you about 65 different questions as the police chief. Unfortunately, I don't have to ask questions like, can you get my parking tickets fixed or anything like that, because I've behaved myself in the city pretty well lately.
Good.
First question, what inspired you to pursue a career in law enforcement?
So I've told this story before. I was a graduate. I graduated in 1980 and from Case High School.
Oh.
And at that time, there was a recession. And so most of the people in my neighborhood worked at Case, Jacobson, Massey Ferguson, American Motors, ultimately Chrysler. And so I kind of look forward to the opportunity to have a job in that area, in mm-hmm. those areas. And then when it was a recession in 1980, a lot of the factories closed down. And so there was someone in my neighborhood, and many wouldn't know who this is, Thelma Orr. And she encouraged me to look into law enforcement. That was something that I never really aspired to do. But it was kind of some divine intervention. And so Thelma saw some attributes in me that I really probably didn't see in myself. And she thought that, you know, that would be a good opportunity for you. And she encouraged others in the neighborhood to join the fire department and other protective services where they were underrepresented. And so hats off to her for her vision, leadership, and wisdom. But that's how the story goes. I never aspired to do it, you know, even though my nickname would suggest otherwise. You know, I had the name Chief since 2 years old from my dad. But, I definitely was directed to the department through Thelma Orr's leadership. Yeah.
And so as a 1980 graduate of Case High School, what does the training look like in 1980 for you to, and was your first position with the Racine Police Department?
Yeah, so in terms of what it takes to become an officer, ironically enough, this building here, not this physical building, but Parkside, this campus, is where they had the entrance exam. So you would take an entrance exam. And then, so there were over 600 people that were here at Parkside
wow.
in 1984 when I applied. Actually, 83 when the application was actually submitted.
Mm-hmm.
So over 600 applicants, and then through that process, I was offered a position ultimately about a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, then you would have to attend a police academy. So that's where most of your training would come in. There were no degree requirements or anything at that time. If you were a high school graduate and you had a fairly decent high school GPA and you clearly had the aptitude to learn, then they would invest in you to send you to the police academy.
Okay.
And at that time, it was 320 hours. And I attended the Milwaukee County Sheriff Police Academy under Sheriff Artisan at the time.
Mm.
And there were eight people hired that year along with, and I was one out of eight people hired that year in 1984.
Mm-hmm. Now, in today's police department, are university credits required, or is that part of if you want to move up in the department, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's both. So, although when I was hired, you did not have to have a degree. Subsequent to that time, it was required that you would have, at the minimum, you'd have 60 college credits. Now, you didn't have to have a physical degree. It could be credits in different areas or different disciplines. But you definitely needed 60 college credits later on. And then most of the young people that come into the department now go beyond an associate degree. They have usually at least an undergraduate degree, and some have masters when they come in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But it's required that you have a minimum of 60 college credits just to apply now.
Wow, interesting. And so tell us a little bit about your journey from 1984, joining the Racine, City of Racine Police Department to today being Art Howell, Chief of the Racine Police Department.
So this was not staged. You would not know this, but my actual post-high school education beyond the police academy actually started here at Parkside.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and so I was a student in the 90s, early 90s, and then my wife and I had a second child, and then that young person who is now much better off. But he was premature. He was born at like 7 pounds, 9 ounces. He was born 2 months premature. So I actually had, I stopped attending Parkside at that time in order to, for family reasons. And then I ultimately went back to college at Springfield in Milwaukee. And then I finished my master's degree at Cardinal Stretch. But yeah, the, my post-high school education literally started here at Parkside.
And tell us about how do you progress through the Racine Police Department? Because I'm assuming at some point you've got to make a decision. Do you want to go beyond, you know, do you want to become a sergeant? Do you want to become a cap? You know, what is that? What did that look like?
So usually what happens is you start out, you know, it's pretty much rudimentary, right? So you become eligible to take the first test at 3 years on. You can take a test to become a traffic investigator. So I did that. And I did well enough to be promoted to the rank of traffic investigator. At 5 years on, you can take a test to become a sergeant or an investigator. So I took those tests, and I ultimately held both the rank of investigator and then subsequently sergeant.
Okay.
Then you can take a test to become a lieutenant. So it's kind of a gradual process. There isn't a formal career trajectory that's in place. We're working on that now, but there was never that in the past. Essentially what would happen is you'd get the opportunity to test for a position, and then you would compete with your peers, and subject to how you did on the testing in the evaluation process, then you could move forward. And so the trajectory of my career was really unique in that in 1980, we never had a gang unit. We never had a gang problem per se. And with the crack epidemic of the 80s, like in 1986, Chief Hansen at the time initiated, actually it was Chief Christensen and followed up by Hansen, but we had a gang unit for the very first time, and I was a relatively young officer. I worked with an investigator they paired me up with, Dean Stanton. He was kind of the smart end of the tape. He was a veteran detective. He knew how to write search warrants and do sworn affidavits, and I didn't know any of those things. I was just a newer officer, but because I was closer in age to the young people that we were dealing with in our unit, the first gang unit ever, they selected me as more or less a person that could establish rapport with some of the young kids that were having struggles with gang association and things of that nature. So so what the benefit of that experience was that even before I was eligible to take an investigative test to be a detective, I was literally working as a detective, as a member of this gang unit. So I look back on it now, and it's amazing how much I learned through that experience and how I got an opportunity to do something that most people would never have an opportunity to do so young in their careers.
Yeah. When do you, you know, thinking back in your career, is there a time when you either realize or think about, you know, I could become a chief. I could continue my progression in the department.
Yeah, so oddly enough, and I don't know that this would be the case for everyone, but that doesn't really happen early on because it's just like there's 200 people in the department, and to assume that you could be the head of the department early on is it's not really realistic, right?
Yeah.
But what I would say after serving, again, with the gang unit, traffic investigator, detective, sergeant, lieutenant, captain. Once you become a commander at the rank of lieutenant captain, then you can start thinking about the possibilities. Where could this go? And then certainly after being promoted in 2005 to the rank of deputy chief. I mean, now at that point, it becomes apparent that you know there's an opportunity potentially. But yeah, prior to that, it's not really something that you would connect to. Being the leader of the organization.
Yeah. So you mentioned Mr. Stanton. Anybody else during your career where you say, oh, here's a person who kind of helped me see a direction or see a pathway?
So, you know, looking back on it, there's just so many people. So, like, I had so many field training officers, Raymond Yost, Dave Boldus, just so many people who, if you look at how your career trajectory went, you can always associate it with different times of your career where people looked after you. You know, Tom Christensen was a major commander, Paul Peterson, you know, of course, Dick Polzine, John Ernst, John Dias, Larry Foster, Gary Gibson. I mean, and even peers, Jerry Freeman, Ed Morelli, Larry Ivey. I could go on and on. I mean, if you're anybody in that organization, it's because you learned something from everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I could go on and on, and there's names that I didn't name, Steve Hurley, a lot of guys that I worked with, it meant a lot in terms of personal development.
Yeah. So you don't get to be chief of police all by yourself.
there's no way. It's too much to learn. And even once you get that role, then you need to have other people support you, because the task is monumental. So you definitely have to have a network of people to support you.
Sure. We're talking with Chief Art Howell, chief of police for the city of Racine. Art, one of the things that as a person who's lived in Racine I've lived in Racine more than I've lived any place else. So we'll say starting as when I was whatever age and living there. But the community police, and I'm probably using the wrong term, but the community police houses, mm-hmm. those have been really successful, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely. So this is Chief Richard Polzine's vision. He was a captain in the Detective Bureau, and he ultimately became chief. And he did so by talking to the Police and Fire Commission as a candidate. Mm. He talked about his vision to bring this COP model to Racine. And we had done community policing in Racine before, so the concept of connecting with the community was not new. But the model that he wanted to introduce with establishing houses at the neighborhood level, that was innovative. And since that time, not only has it grown, but we have other cities across the nation that come to us to look to see how to incubate such a initiative in their communities. So yeah.
That was the first one on 6th Street.
So the first one? Prominent one was on West 6th Street there. Yeah. There were other ones. There was one on Frank Avenue that was right off of what that was preceded the West 6th Street location.
Oh, okay.
And then we had one on Villa Street. We had a storefront on Villa Street. We had one on Grand. So there were many local landlords who worked with us to give us properties rent free. Mm. In areas that were strategic so that we could establish a base. But subsequent to those early locations in 92-93, we were able to, Chief Polzine was able to work with some local businessmen to come up with the funding, and SCJ was involved. Racine Community Foundation helped with the construction of the very first new home, COP house at 18th and Mead. And so it grew, but mm-hmm. it started with local landlords that wanted to give us a base of operation in troubled neighborhoods.
Yeah. And I mean, you drive down, comparing 6th Street, let's say, before the first cop house and where that neighborhood in 6th Street is today, it looks completely different. And I'd say it looks different in a positive way from the way homes are kept up and what that property looks like.
Yeah. Now that's kind of a bonus that happened along the way, the revitalization of housing stock. We knew that we could go in and change the neighborhood in terms of crime mm-hmm. and relationships with the residents. But what we were surprised to find out is that once we elevated, the profile of the neighborhood from a safety perspective, there was more investment. Habitat mm-hmm. for Humanity came in to build more homes. Mm-hmm. Neighbors even started to have even more pride in their neighborhoods. And so it was a pleasant surprise to see that along with reducing crime, we were kind of, infusing the neighborhood with development.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it's fair to say that we're living in a time when the relationship between police departments across the country and the people those departments serve is under a great deal of scrutiny and in some cases criticism or people taking a close look at that. How are you or as the Racine Police Department and as a chief working to build positive relationships with the residents of Racine? And I'm throwing in surrounding communities because of it was something Corey Mason said at a meeting where, if you're living in Mount Pleasant, but you're a block away from the border between Racine and Mount Pleasant, some people would say, well, I'm a Racine resident, even though you're not in, quote unquote, the city of Racine.
Sure. So let's take the first part of the question. So in terms of what we're doing to, build relationships, you don't wait until there's a crisis and then start to build relationships, right? Yeah. So the relationship building started, again, back in the 70s with Larry Foster, Bob Quintanilla, the gentleman who ran the Community Relations Bureau. And then in the 90s, early 90s under Chief Polzin, it really took off under the COP philosophy. In 1995, we introduced myself and Steve Hurley. We partnered to found the Racine Police Athletic Association. That was an organization where we worked with young people. We would take the young people fishing every year. We had basketball tournaments. We had different things that we did to basically just show the young people in the community that police officers are pretty much just like they were, just regular people with a job to do. And so the relationship building continues to this very day. When we do the Policeman's Ball, we use some of those resources to fund the Shop with a Cop initiative. And so we continue to evolve as it relates to building rapport, because that's something that's, you know, if you have a major event, you know, you can't go out and build trust that day. You have to have a bank account, kind of a trust equity set up so that you can, you know, have the rapport you need it.
Sure.
Relative to the second part of the question, in terms of this community, a lot of people, you know, if I'm a burglar and I'm doing my burglaries, you know, at 21st and Racine area, you know, part of that's Mount Pleasant, part of that's Racine. If I'm on the north side and I'm operating as a car thief and I'm at 3 Mile and Erie, you know, part of my crimes are in Caledonia, part of Racine. And so crime has no boundaries that way. It doesn't really care. And so you have to understand that whether it's Racine, Mount Pleasant, Sturtevant, Caledonia, countywide, I mean, we're interconnected in a way that requires that we, you know, leverage all of our partnerships and relationships so that, you know, we're going to live, you know, sink or swim together. So it's better to connect. And I think that's, I can't speak for the mayor, but certainly I believe he's aware of those challenges and that, you know, I think with the Resilient Communities Initiative that was sponsored by SCJ or the Wingspread, the Johnson Foundation at Wingspread. Those are people who have the vision to connect the communities in a way that we can be deliver services in a more efficient manner.
Yeah. As an African American, talk to me about how your perspective helps, challenges you, your leadership, your strategies and tactics on leadership in creating those positive relationships in the community.
So here's my take on, you know, ethnicity, race, equity, inclusion, right? So everybody brings a different perspective and a different experience to the table. And it's not always a black and white. I mean, you could have five people who are European but have five completely different experiences, right? So so what I bring to the table is not just a black perspective, but, you know, a perspective of, like, my dad worked at Case Company for 33 years, lived in a community where, ironically, some of the people that I was hired with, their dads worked at Case Company as well.
Uh-huh.
Three the year I was hired, three out of eight, their dads worked at Case Company. And so we always thought that was unique.
Yeah.
And so we'd have these conversations. But in the case of my dad, like, when he bought a house, he and my mom purchased a home in the 60s, like, they could only live in a certain area because of redlining and things of that nature. And so there's a historic reason why there's certain, I mean, and back then when everybody had jobs, like, probably 90% of the people in my neighborhood owned their homes.
Own their home. Uh-huh.
They were restricted to live in certain neighborhoods. And so, so I raised that issue from an equity lens in terms of some people look at those neighborhoods as not so positive, right? So, but my experience is different because I lived in those neighborhoods and I knew the people that lived in those neighborhoods, and I understood that they were basically just like everybody else. They worked at the local factories and they contributed to this community. And so I didn't have a negative connotation of those communities. Even today, there's still people that live in those communities that own their homes, which connects nicely to the COP philosophy, because what you want to do as a COP officer is you want to locate the 90%+ of the decent people in the neighborhoods, hardworking, God-fearing people. You want to locate and connect with those people, and they'll help you deal with the other small percentage yeah. of people that are disorderly.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the exact number, but I remember at the Racine Smart City Summit that took place in September, and you were on a panel along with the fire chief, and you talked about the number of burglaries and how that, I mean, it was a drastic decline in Racine. And how has your department helped help with that issue, help that decline or reduce that?
Sure. It's about focus. Early on, so this goes back to 2012 when I became chief. When I was, I came from the Detective Bureau, and so I was really well-versed relative to what was going on with burglaries. And so we had a couple young detectives, Kevin Cooper, Chad Stillman, and we. I sat down with these young people and I explained to them that, you know, homicide is obviously a crime that is horrific, but that it was a rare occurrence that that would happen. But people were getting their homes broken into, like, on a regular basis. We averaged over 1,000 for many, many years, over 1,000 home invasions.
Per year.
Wow. Annually. And so we talked about some ways to be strategic in terms of dealing with that. And one of the first things that we did is we revamped an ordinance that required local pawn shops to now digitally monitor, like, if because we knew that a lot of burglary loot would be taken to the pawn shops. We had this catalog card where it was all manual, and so we upgraded that. We upgraded the ordinance that says that if you're a pawn shop or secondhand dealer, you had to take pictures of anything that you had that came in, and then that those digital pictures would be available to the police department and so on and so forth. And so we used technology to upgrade that. And so we were able, starting with that particular initiative, and then after those two detectives moved on to other areas, we had a series of other detectives that came in and picked the ball up and ran. We used this Leeds Online software, and then also Noopers, which is Northeast Wisconsin pawn shop software, basically written by Green Bay officers. And we just used technology to advance this. And so we went from averaging over 1,000 burglaries a year to under 900, and then under 700, and then under 600, and then under 500, and then most recently, in the 18, the 19 numbers are being crunched now, but in 18, we had under 400. It was like 370 plus burglaries. Mm-hmm. Now, and as I shared at the conference, I mean, we don't brag on that number because, once again, as I always state, put a disclaimer on this, if you're one of the 371 people who had your house broken into, you're not impressed with the data, but the data is otherwise impressive, right? It's over 60%
right.
reduction
right.
in 5 years.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But I'm still one of them.
Yeah, unless you're one of those ones
was
unlucky.
Yeah. But still, I think the thing as a, even though I live just outside of the city of Racine, again, that's one of those perspectives of, I don't live in the city of Racine, but I almost view it as sure. I do, because sure. I'm a couple blocks away from the Racine and Wind Point border.
Sure.
But to know that that there are people working to help make the city, you know, not only a safer place, but in doing so, it probably becomes a more attractive place for people coming into the area, especially at a time when you see here's this development and, you know, visioning Greater Racine and the work that they're doing, and all that stuff kind of works together, doesn't it?
Sure, it definitely does. And for example, what the department was able to do on Anthony Lane is just really exemplary in terms of following the model that Chief Polzin laid down. So when you talk about development, so Anthony Lane, formerly Chicago Drive, was a place where Chicago gang members would literally come to set up, you know, business after leaving Chicago or Milwaukee.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I became chief, I mean, I looked at what was going on over there, and immediately we decided that this was an area that needed some attention. And so through focus, right, there's so many things that go on in the community, and we focused on restoration in the Anthony Lane area. Mm. And we were able to get a developer to ultimately come in, and they spent over $3 million to get that place back on its feet. And it's a constant, you know, it's a constant battle to keep the communities, you know, at that level. But it's certainly, it attracts that same developer came and bought other properties in Racine after having some success on Anthony Lane. And so to your point, whether it's VGR, whether it's the police department, whether it's the work that happens through Johnson Foundation at Wingspread, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes to make this community successful.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Chief Art Howell, Chief of Police for the city of Racine. You recently had a loss in Officer John Hetland. How do you, as chief, and I'm assuming that the department takes this pretty personally, how do you work to help your officers, detectives, investigators deal with whatever sort of grieving that they have to go through?
So John's loss is going to take a while for the department to get over that, and there's no sugarcoating that. I mean we're now in the process where we're going through the preliminary hearing process, and mm-hmm. you know, it's be difficult to heal completely while all that stuff is going on. And so the main thing that we try to preach to our people is that you know, this was an event that, I mean, it happens all across the country, unfortunately, but you know, it hasn't happened here in over 40 years.
Yeah.
And so I was 12 years old the last time the city lost an officer. And mm-hmm. so there's nobody in the Racine Police Department that has ever experienced anything like this. And so, but, you know, you have to, how we are handling it personally is we're wrapping our arms around the Hetland family. I mean, you know, you've got a mother and father, you know, Ron and Rochelle, and, you know, and brothers, sisters, Shelly and Jason, you know, son and daughter, Hunter, Brooke. I mean, certainly we have a great deal of grief internally, but then I think the way that we're really trying to heal is to basically understand that the family suffered an even greater loss.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so we spend a lot of time trying to support the family.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, we're supporting ourselves. But it'll be a long time. That one, that's something that, you know, you never anticipate. But I can tell you this, you know, John Hetland was a phenomenal officer, and you will not find anyone who will tell you otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell people how to deal with that, and I struggle myself, but I just tell them, you know, in order to honor John's memory, you just have to, you know, you have to pay it forward. You can't pay John back for a sacrifice. You have to pay it forward, and mm-hmm. and it's difficult. But as I've shared publicly, we have a resilient group of people. We often get strength from the family. I've visited the house several times, and, you know, you go over there to try to lift the family up, and then it turns out that they say something to lift you up. Hmm. And so it's kind of amazing, you know, what the experience that we're going through. It's heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching. It's difficult to believe even now that it happened. I believe our people will grow from it. It's just going to take a while. It won't be overnight.
I mean, just in the conversation we're having here, one of the interesting things is thinking about the variety of responsibilities that not just you as chief of the Racine Police Department, but anyone who's at that level in a police department, the variety of things that you do. You know, it's like on one hand you're a little psychologist, and on the other hand it's the investigator, and on the other hand it's the administrator. And how do you balance all those things?
Yeah, so my wife would tell you that I don't balance it very well. You know, I can say this. It's the development that I had early on. I mean, I never knew all the different positions that I held would help me in this capacity, but that's pretty much what has occurred, right? There's no manual to learn this job, and so really the manual is just life. And so you go through all these different experiences, and then when different things happen, you can attract, you can pull from past experiences. But you're right. I mean, there's days that you have to be a friend. There's days that you have to, you know, be the visionary. It's not the same every day because circumstances change. But the one thing you want to do is you want to be inclusive. My style has been to hear many, many other voices before I make decisions.
And how about you know, seeing you a couple times recently in the community at different events, has that been something different? As now we're talking 2012, so we're looking at 8 years here. But your involvement with the community, I mean, you're the face of the department. And you, I'm assuming you spend more time at events in the city or doing things just as in that role.
Yes and no. I mean, if I look back on it, I mean, on the surface, that would be accurate. But I worked with back in the 90s, late 90s. I served on the board at the Brace Center, and then I also served on the board at the Taylor Home. And I actually had some, and I was a young sergeant at the time. And I had some police commanders tell me, you know, Art, you know, you should be going back to school to finish your degree. You know, you could be chief someday. But I was engaged.
And they were right.
They were right. And I never really, to be honest with you, I didn't see what they saw. Mm-hmm. I felt like, well, I don't really need a title to be engaged. I can be engaged now. Now, they were right in the sense that ultimately I was going to need this education piece to balance things out. But I believe I was true to my passion in terms of, you know, I won't need to wait until I, you know, acquire a title. There's some things I can do even now.
Right.
And, you know, as a young sergeant. And so, yeah there's a balance. But the point is that, so I had a high profile in the community, even as a young sergeant. And then after being promoted to the rank of sergeant, and Chief Polzine appointed me as the public information officer. And so then I literally became the face and the voice of the department, like in the 90s, right, as a sergeant. And so everything that happened after that, being the PIO, the public information officer, grant writer, did a lot of council appearances on behalf of the chief's office. And so I had an opportunity to really experience what the chief's office was like 20 plus years before becoming the chief. So,
Wow. Interesting. Well, the time has gone by very quickly, and that always tells me it's been a fun conversation, because when I look over at the clock and see that, we got to wrap her up.
Or either I talk too much, one or the other.
No, not at all. That was a really interesting conversation. I've been talking with Chief Art Howell, Chief of Police for the City of Racine. I know that you have a busy schedule, and I appreciate you taking the time, Chief Howell, to come and talk with us on Parkside Today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
All right. To hear past issues of Parkside Today, please visit uwp.edu/parksidetoday. Thanks for listening, everyone.